Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Two Republicans in the Ohio House have proposed a total ban on abortion, including in cases of rape, incest, or when the mother's life is at risk. This latest shot over the bow of abortion rights organizations comes just less than a week after a federal judge ruled an earlier abortion law as unconstitutional. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Joining us, Cleveland.com Statehouse reporter Jackie Borchardt. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Cincinnati Inquirer, Columbus Bureau Chief Chrissy Thompson, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles, welcome back.
Great to be here.
So why try to push this bill now if an earlier, more lenient law, I guess, was just blocked? Joe Ingles?
Politics.
Okay.
You know, we're coming up on a primary election, and conservatives want to be conservative. And this is a big, huge ticket item for conservative voters. And conservative voters would like to see abortion outlawed. We're seeing that the people who are signing on to this are, a lot of them are up for reelection. And in some cases, they have two different people running against them in the primary. And so they want to be out there on this issue, really taking a hardline approach on it. This year, it probably wouldn't pass because, if you remember, 2 years ago, Governor Kasich would not sign the heartbeat abortion bill that was passed by the legislature.
Uh-huh.
With Governor Kasich,
and they couldn't muster the votes to override
right,
his veto. Yeah.
They couldn't override it. And this is the same kind of bill. So with Governor Kasich still at the helm of the governorship, then, you know, they wouldn't be able probably to get it through this year. But it is going to be an issue that the people who are against abortion can hammer home through the campaign. It's also an issue that people who support abortion rights can hammer home because they can say, hey, look, you put a real conservative person in there and this goes through and we have no abortion in Ohio. So the politics of it are probably the biggest thing at play here right now.
The bill, before we move on with this bill and just the prospects of it anyway, Chrissy Thompson, the bill that the court just held up, was the bill that banned abortions in cases where fetal diagnosis of Down syndrome was the reason for the abortion. That's been held up. Does that really have anything to do with this second bill? Are they just different? And there's different issues.
Well, it's two different approaches, I think, mm-hmm. of how to limit or stop abortions by people who oppose abortion rights. The groups such as Ohio Right to Life and the National Right to Life believe in, like, incrementally chipping away at Roe v. Wade.
Like the Down syndrome.
That's right.
Example.
And then there's other folks who say, we think this is wrong. Why don't we just get a total ban on abortion in front of the Supreme Court and then get rid of Roe v. Wade with one fell swoop? And those folks feel like they have an opportunity right now. Because if President Trump appoints another Supreme Court justice, there might be the votes to at least make major changes to Roe v. Wade or even dismantle it. So.
You know, Jackie Borchardt, what about the incremental ban? The Attorney General has been defending the Down syndrome example. What about the cost to defend these kinds of bills, these kinds of laws?
Well, that's certainly, you know, something that was on the mind of lawmakers when they were reviewing most recently the Down syndrome abortion ban, because given all the case law out there, and especially Roe v. Wade, it's considered unconstitutional. So uh-huh. you know that there's going to be, you know, a lengthy litigation involved. And so Representative Nikki Antonio from up in Northeast Ohio, she's a Democrat. And she requested a kind of preliminary analysis of what this might cost. And they looked at, you know, Indiana has defended a number of laws, including a similar Down syndrome abortion ban, which is also on hold over there, and Texas. And, you know, they couldn't pinpoint a figure, but said it's guaranteed to cost, you know, at least hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions more, you know, when you have something that where someone's challenging the constitutionality of it, you know, the state is going to have to pay if the state loses, you know, they have to pay fees for the plaintiffs who are challenging it.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. We're talking right now about a new proposal for a total ban on abortion in Ohio that would include in cases of rape, incest, or even when the mother's life is at risk. My guests, Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com, Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Inquirer, and Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Joe Ingles, the Ohio Right to Life, the predominant, I suppose, abortion opponent in the state, has not signed on to this bill.
No, they're still looking at it. And its president, Mike Ganadakis, says that what they're really looking at are all the details of it, because they don't want to endorse a bill that, first of all, they think could set them back in the long run.
How so?
Well, if it's not constitutional and it's blatantly unconstitutional, if they find that, if they think it's not constitutional, and then they challenge it all the way to the Supreme Court, and then maybe they get there a little early before Trump is, you know, put in another person, and it gets affirmed by the court, then that sets them back. So they could get, you know, that could set them back in the court. There's also the thing, the concern about this bill would make women who get an abortion, it would hold them criminally liable. That has been something that traditionally has not really flown with this legislature, or at least with Right to Life and some of the Republicans who back some of these abortion bans. They've not wanted to go there. And, you know, as Mike Ganadakis says, you know, he's looking at whether it could even go, you know, if a woman has a miscarriage, whether it can make her criminally liable for that miscarriage, depending on the way it's written. And this bill is, I think it's like 248 pages. It's huge. So, you know, there's a lot in it. And depending on the way it's written and all the legal repercussions of it, it could have some things in it that could, that the Ohio Right to Life, at least, thinks could be a problem for the issue in the movement at large.
One of the bill's co-sponsors, Representative Nina Vitale, has called this a Save Them Both bill. Do you guys know what that's about, what that means?
Yeah. So, I mean, the bill, essentially, the way that it bans abortion is it makes an unborn human a person on equal footing with you or me or Joe or Chrissy. So for the purposes of the criminal code.
Okay.
So that, you know, a crime against, you know, a fetus would be, could be murder, could be homicide, could be manslaughter. I mean, it's really an open-ended question. And, you know, I talked with the other bill sponsor, Representative Ron Hood, and he said that, you know, his opinion, the prosecutor would make the decision then of what crime to charge. But what Nino Vitale was talking about is that, you know, this bill doesn't make any exceptions for cases of rape or incest or even to save the life of the mother. What it does include is a provision that says if a physician, if the fetus dies as a result of some, you know, surgery or some other medical thing, that as long as it wasn't the intent to abort the fetus, that that they would not be liable for that death in that instance. And, you know, Save Them Both, he's saying, you know, the unborn child is on the same footing as the mother. So there's no even discussion of, is this to save the life of the mother? That's not even an option.
Yeah. And as far as the rape issue goes, Representative Vitale also has said that many women who get pregnant from rape later regret their decision to have an abortion. I wondered if any of you guys are aware of any kind of surveys on those kind of issues, or if it's just anecdotal evidence. What do we know?
I haven't seen any studies that support that. I'm sure there are probably some anti-abortion sources probably have studies that say that. But I bet if I went to the abortion rights supporters, they probably had studies that say the opposite. Mm. I haven't seen a legitimate study that shows anything like that.
Sometimes what folks reference when they say things like that is support groups for women who have terminated pregnancies. you know, it's an emotional decision.
I'm sure there are anecdotal evidence of it, you know, just as there would be of anything. Mm-hmm. Since Governor Kasich was elected and took the office 8 years ago, there have been 20 now abortion bills that have passed. Many are facing litigation, not just the Down syndrome. So this has been a very activist 8 years when it comes to limiting abortion rights in Ohio. Very
right.
active.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you know, that's the thing. This has been a very hot button issue for Republicans. It's something that they campaign on. And honestly, I don't know if anyone else noticed it, but over the weekend with the gun march across the nation, I was seeing a lot of social media posts from people who likened it and somehow to abortion. It always came around to abortion for them. And I think it's become one of those single...
Likened what to abortion?
They likened the gun thing to abortion, or they tried to make a link, you know. They attempted to make a link. I saw at least a dozen posts like this on my Facebook and Twitter and social media pages. So I'm assuming other people saw that as well.
Were they saying that that we should have more gun control in the same way that we should have less abortion? Or?
Right, something to that effect.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
I'm
That's
not
interesting.
Really certain that I actually understood it. I'm not going to pretend that, because some of those posts were kind of, you know, but I did see the attempt to link the two.
Uh-huh.
And I think that kind of shows in the minds of those people how important abortion is to them, you know. But you know, abortions, I don't know. It's a very hot topic issue, and it's a single issue voter sometimes that will go into the – I've even been to local, you know, town halls or political events, and where the candidate has been asked, a county commissioner candidate or something, has been asked where they stand on abortion. And I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, what county commissioner is going to be, you know?
You know, I see what you're saying on that. On the other hand, you know, whenever you're promoting somebody by way of election, you're giving them a job. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's down the road, if they're ambitious people down the road, you know, maybe, I mean, one side or the other probably would do well to know that if that's something that's important to them.
Well, apparently it is very important to a lot of Republican voters. So,
you know, it's an interesting, when Joe says that these are one issue voters, it is an interesting I just have been lately thinking a lot about this. So she's right that often this is one of the main things that folks will vote on. There are some people who would call themselves pro-life who do they have an issue with the taking of anyone's life, right? And so
the death penalty.
The death penalty is one. Niraj Intani is for instance a Republican in the state house who opposes the death penalty because he calls himself pro-life and he says he opposes the death penalty. There are some folks who would also support more gun control because of the same issue. So it is interesting to see those positions, those three positions would take you in different directions if you're just going to vote on that issue. Mm-hmm. And so I think it'll be interesting to see if in the years to come, especially since gun control is such a hot topic right now, if folks will vote start factoring that in more when they vote, or if they will continue to think in some of these Republican districts that abortion is a stance on abortion is their number one issue, because it would you know, each voter has to weigh what each of these issues mean to them, and if some of these other issues started to factor more heavily, it would possibly change the you might change who you were voting for because of that. It's just an interesting concept to think about.
We will turn to the issue of gun rights when we come back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It is our weekly reporter roundtable. The marches in Columbus and across the country, coinciding with the National March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, was organized by survivors of the Parkland shooting to demand action from Congress. Every Town for Gun Safety, a national group co-founded and largely funded by former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, assisted with organizing and promoting the events. Columbus crowd estimates ranged from 4,000 to 7,000 people. Organizers before the event predicted 5,000 based on Facebook signups. Many of the people also brought children or came with relatives or friends. Still with us, Cleveland.com State House reporter Jackie Borchardt, Cincinnati Inquirer, Columbus Bureau Chief Chrissy Thompson, and Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles. What in the Ohio General Assembly right now, as it stands, what significance does the march on the State House in Ohio have to state lawmakers? Chrissy Thompson?
Well, I think so Republicans control both houses of the State House. And generally speaking, the Republicans who say they're taking action on issues related to school shootings have been in support of what they would call school safety measures. Those are things such as having law enforcement officers in schools, having plans for what to do when there is an active shooter, and giving schools money to train teachers who want to be armed. So we're seeing more action in those areas right now. There is some talk possibly that there might be a red flag bill introduced in the State House,
which is a reporting mechanism for people who are considered dangerous.
Right. So if you had a relative who you think has made threats about shooting up a school, you could report that, and a court could decide that that person should not have access to firearms for a certain period of time. Mm. So the NRA has said that they theoretically support that sort of a bill if there are a whole bunch of criteria that ensure there's due process, et cetera, et cetera. So that's really the only bill thus far that I see. Possibly there might be a Republican that introduces it, but I just want to point out that hasn't happened yet. And that's something that Governor Kasich has asked for in his kind of bipartisan package, but nothing in that bipartisan package has been taken up yet in the State House.
It hasn't been proposed
by Republicans. I think it's really important to note that I think three of the six policy proposals that Kasich rolled out, which were backed by his kind of, you know, panel of advisors on this issue, which most of them are Republicans. There's only, I think, maybe three that were Democrats. And of those, three of them had already been introduced by Democrats.
Right.
Which they haven't gone anywhere, haven't had, you know, maybe they've had an initial hearing, but nothing since then. Just last week, Senator Joe Schiavone and Senator Sandra Williams, both Democrats, introduced a version of the red flag bill. Both Senate President Larry Obhoff and House Speaker Cliff Rosenberger said that there has been some talk among Republicans in their respective chambers about sponsoring it. But, I mean, realistically, you're not going to see anything go through unless it's unless it's sponsored by a Republican.
To the point that when I talked to a couple of folks on the governor's staff for a story kind of running through these different options, and the Schiavone-Williams bill is exactly what they want, what the governor and his folks want, and to the point that basically Tim Bingham, who is the governor's lobbyist, basically said, well, we're considering the bill, but basically the version that we support might be different than this. In other words, it's just a death sentence to a bill to have a Democrat sponsoring it when it comes to guns right now in the current legislature. So.
Right. And one of the key parts of the bill that seems to be the sticking point there to the Democratic bill that's been introduced is the fact that there are 14 days after the guns are confiscated that they could go to court and make the case that they need their guns back and that there are okay to give their guns back. And the question for a lot of these Republicans is, wait a minute, you know, that determination should be made and then they'll take the guns. They would be fine if the court on the front end said, okay, go take the guns, and then they take the guns. But by taking the guns and then having the court action, that's a problem for some of these Republicans.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. We're talking about the prospect for gun reform in the state of Ohio. Somewhere between 4,000 and 7,000 people marched on the State House on Saturday in support of more gun control in Ohio. They marched across the country at state houses across the country, in big cities across the country, as well as Washington, D.C. Six states already have similar laws in place to, you know, these red flag laws. Mm-hmm. And there's another 22 bills pending across the country on this score. Is there anything to learn from those other states?
Specifically related to red flag laws, I think it's just interesting to note that even though the NRA has come out and said that theoretically they support red flag laws, they don't support any of those bills unless something has changed in the last couple of days. So I think that's I think that's just important, because if there is a state where Republicans are willing to do things, you know, against the support of the NRA, then those bills would have more of a chance of passing in Republican controlled states. I don't know that Ohio is one of those, so we'll just have to see. But thus far, it really doesn't look like there's been any, besides Governor Kasich, really any big movement to buck what the NRA wants you to do here in Ohio if you're a Republican and they control the state house. I mean, it just matters. That's
right. A new statewide poll has shown that across many demographics, including political affiliation, a majority of Ohioans want gun control or gun reform. And I'm coming across more and more people who say this is a one issue vote for them. I mean, that's what they're going to check. They're going to check how much funding NRA is given to any given candidate, and they're going to vote on that issue alone, which is kind of new.
That is kind of new, because this has always been one of those issues that people say they care about, but they don't make it the deciding issue.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's what this, you know, we're going to see that in the upcoming primary and in November. We're going to see what issue is driving people. Right now, it's been abortion.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got enough people who are saying, you know, and that's at least on the, well, it's been abortion on both sides, honestly, but especially on the Republican side. But the thing is that, you know, if you've got enough people who are caring about this gun issue and they start voting on this gun issue, we could see huge changes in November. We just could. And while there are some Republic or some Democrats that are more friendly to, you know, some of the gun owners and the Republican side of this issue, traditionally Republican NRA side of this issue, most Democrats want some controls. So if people are going that way, and that is the issue that's driving them, we could see possibly, you know, massive changes in November.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. And I mean, we don't really have any yet. We don't have any real research that shows that that's the number one issue and that it's a single issue voter that's going to go out and vote that way.
How could it affect the primaries coming up? We've got some contested primaries for governor, Jackie Borchardt.
Yeah, I mean, this has been, we talk about, you know, a single issue or a dominant, I like to think of it like a dominant issue, because I don't think everyone's just
a single issue.
Right? I think we can give voters more credit than that, right?
Well, some people say they are, though, but yeah, I do give them more credit.
So, you know, the gun issue is a big dominant issue, usually in the Republican primary for people who are pro Second Amendment.
Right.
They want to make sure that that's protected, and that's where a lot of the power from the NRA and affiliated groups comes from. It's not necessarily in the money that they give to candidates, but in their email list and their contact list. And they can, you know, blast out alerts to say, hey, this bill is no good. These lawmakers are no good. And they can mobilize voters, you know, millions of them very quickly. And so it's interesting to see that issue is kind of emerging as a dominant issue on the Democratic side, because typically I think it's one of those issues that's in the mix, but not a leading issue. And in this Democratic primary, it's certainly an issue where you could divide the candidates, you know, pretty easily.
There's a big distinction,
right?
In the Democratic primary for governor.
You know, there's honestly a big distinction in the Republican as well. Let's talk about the Democrats first, but let's not forget that there are, there are differences.
I'll write that down.
Yes. Sorry, don't mean to derail, but
let's talk about the
that
Democrats
is important
first.
To talk about.
Yeah. All right, so the big difference in the Democrats.
Write that down.
Duly noted.
Mental sticky note.
Okay, the Democrats, we've got Rich Cordray. Supposedly the he's endorsed and that kind of a thing. He's got the most funding. And he has a pretty strong record on pro-gun rights. Behind him, he's had an A rating from the NRA in the past. Then we have Dennis Kucinich, former mayor of Cleveland, former congressman, who is completely
opposite.
Yeah.
Calling for an assault weapons ban.
Right.
He's pretty much as anti-gun as they come right now.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there was a poll done. We just learned. We're not sure. It was run by a television station in Cleveland that has them neck and neck.
Totally tied among Democratic primary voters. Yeah. We just got these results this morning, as far as I know. And I'm just looking at them right now. I think it was Channel 19 in Cleveland that that paid someone to do this poll. And it looks like there's about 500 Democratic, likely Democratic primary voters, and Kucinich and Cordray tied at 21%, and the rest of the candidates in the single digits. So,
That's
is that an Ohio poll or the Cleveland area, Chrissy? I'm interested.
You're looking a little skeptical.
Well, let's do another mental sticky note while I read the fine print here.
Think of it this way.
Well, I mean, Dennis
Chrissy
has
works
huge
on that. What do you think?
Well, I was saying Dennis Kucinich has huge name recognition up in Northeast Ohio, and I think we also need to, you know, at least
mention he's got name recognition across the state.
Absolutely. But you know, Joe Schiavone, he's a state senator from Youngstown area, and he's you know, still a sitting senator at the state house, and he's introduced a number of bills. He you know, the red flag bill we just talked about, and you know, he's supported some other measures. I think he's been endorsed by the Moms Demand Action, you know, gun sense. I forget their whole name, but basically, you know, big group of volunteer advocacy group in the state. So yeah, I mean, this is one of those issues where if this is your issue, it's pretty easy to differentiate the candidates.
And you've got to remember, too, if this is polling in the city, you're going to get a much different response than you are if you go poll Democrats in outlying areas, especially in rural areas. Mm-hmm. They're going to be much more gun friendly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here in the city, if something happens, you can call the police and they're there in what, you know, no time at all. But if you're, you know, in one of these outlying counties, they look at, you know, providing their own protection many times with guns, because they know it could be a while before a police officer gets there if they need something. So there is, if you look at the Democrats, there's a difference between a rural Democrat and a city Democrat on gun issues.
And on most issues among Republicans as well, short of the abortion issue.
Right.
You know, speaking of the primaries, I'm kind of curious what you guys think about turnout this year, if we're going to see an uptick like they have, say, in Illinois and other places, given the increased intensity of the political conversation these days and the issues.
I think you'll see an increase over our last gubernatorial primary in 2014. And I think you'll probably see more people pull a Democratic Party ballot. And that's only because the Republican primary seems to be, you know, a much wider gap between the two candidates that
Mike
are running.
Mike DeWine and Mary Taylor.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's in the same poll, which is a statewide poll, by the way.
And how is that?
Mike DeWine is ahead. He has 50% of the likely GOP voters. Mary Taylor has 18, and the rest are undecided. So
I'm surprised it's that big of a gap.
I mean, now some of those undecided folks will go for Mary Taylor, but not all of them. So that race is well in hand for him.
Well, it's probably a good chance to remind your listeners that Ohio does not have a closed party registration system. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't really actually register for a party in Ohio. You're considered affiliated with a party depending on what primary ballot you've pulled at the last primary election. And, you know, there is someone can dispute your party affiliation. So if you're like a lifelong Republican and you're pretty well known to be that, theoretically, you, if you were to pull a Democratic ballot and someone saw you and knew that you had that history, they could challenge you. That doesn't really happen. Where it really comes into effect, though, is if you're ever planning on running for office, because then there's a record of that and they can
like
say
Donald Trump.
They can say, hey, you're running as a Republican, but you voted as a Democrat in the last two elections. So and then, of course,
that
in the general
is a public record. It's not who you voted for, but that you voted in a primary.
And then in the general, you're not bound to that at all. You can vote for you know,
I think what's
want.
Really interesting in this primary, what I'm watching is how many new voters are out there. How many new voters come into the fold. You look at this gun issue, and it was orchestrated by the Parkland students in Parkland, Florida, that were the victims of all the gun violence. And it's a very young movement. You saw a lot of young people. You saw a lot of older people out there supporting them. But the movement itself was
Is youth. It's a youth movement.
And, and another public service announcement. On that point, just sorry to interrupt, is that if you are 17 in Ohio and you're going to be 18 by
Election Day,
by Election Day in November, you can register to vote and vote in the primary in May.
So do vote.
I mean, it's great to start that habit early. I don't vote in primaries myself because of I'm a journalist and I have been, you know, my entire adult life. So I've never voted in a primary. And not that I didn't want to. Occasionally.
Well, sometimes, depending on where you live, that's your choice, right? Yeah. Especially in Ohio, we have, you know, thinking just congressional districts are pretty gerrymandered. State house districts are pretty gerrymandered. So, like, if you want to have a say in who your representative, sometimes that happens at the primary.
Well, but oftentimes, sometimes.
Right.
But
well, I'm
often.
Just,
yeah, I know.
I mean,
what
I've never voted in a primary either, but, you know, I can see where some people may consider themselves to be really independent.
Yeah.
And or even, you know, leaning the other way or toward, you know, maybe vote for candidates of the opposite party most of the time. But they just happen to live in a place where it makes sense for them to vote for in that primary election.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a general election for some areas when you think about
exactly.
it, because the Democrat wouldn't be or the Republican, whichever.
Depending on how it's gerrymandered. Right. Mm-hmm. We will return to our reporters roundtable in just a minute. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Still with us, Cleveland.com State House reporter Jackie Borchardt, Cincinnati Inquirer, Columbus Bureau Chief Chrissy Thompson, and Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles. I duly noted that we were going to talk about the Republicans and gun control or gun rights, however you want to put it. Chrissy Thompson, what's going on there? What's the interest there in the upcoming primaries?
Yeah, so given the vast support generally among Republicans in Ohio for gun rights, Mary Taylor has sought to make this the main issue in the campaign. Thus far, I don't know that she's been totally successful, but because she is has kind of a unblemished, from a Republican standpoint, record on gun rights. And Mike DeWine has had an F rating from the NRA. He has worked really hard lately
to overcome that.
But when he was a senator, he had several votes that were in favor of assault weapons bans, things like that, and actually was one of the main people pushing some gun control measures. And so that did not endear him to the NRA. And I think jury's out on I have this I can look it up, but jury's out on what they're going to do in this election as far as his rating, but he had not fully recovered when he ran for attorney general. So
I just wonder how much he can fight to overcome that and how much of an issue he can make given the climate right now, Joe Ingles.
Yeah, I don't know. That remains to be seen if he can overcome that. But isn't it odd, though, that we're talking about Cordray having an A or A plus rating from the NRA and Mike DeWine having an F?
Yeah.
I mean, it's bizarre.
But again, I think it's important to note that those are not their ratings today.
Right.
Those are things that have happened in the past.
Yes.
And even, you know, Mike DeWine has earned the endorsement of the Ohio Buckeye Firearms Association, which is probably the loudest voice at the State House for gun owners in Ohio. And Mary Taylor won the endorsement from, I believe, Ohioans for Concealed Carry, another group.
Yeah, they're a little bit more conservative.
Yeah, more to the right.
So DeWine's most recent rating from the NRA was a C in 2014.
Okay. So he's worked clawing his way back to the good graces of the NRA.
Well, and then again, sorry to keep leaping back and forth between Republicans and Democrats, but, you know, Rich Cordray, you know, he defended the Ohio law that said basically state and federal law is the law of the land on gun control measures. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that was his job as attorney general to do that. And we've even seen just in the past
but
week.
But he relished it.
He did. And he showed up, you know, at a second and helped sponsor a Second Amendment rally at the State House. But in the past week, he's come out and said, you know, that he does think that even with that law in place, there are ways for cities to, you know, pass some gun control measures or other safety measures intended to that won't, you know, butt up against that law, won't conflict with it.
Last week, the Ohio House passed a bill that would withdraw some state funding to cities that use red light cameras.
Yep.
Yeah. The Ohio Supreme Court last year ruled, snap out of it. We're not talking about guns anymore. The Ohio Supreme Court last year ruled that municipalities have the authority to use traffic cameras to issue traffic citations. Right. The Ohio Municipal League is calling this action by the Ohio House a punishment, calling it a flagrant overreach by the state. The measure would also limit civil actions regarding traffic law violations to be heard in municipal and county courts, taking them out of mayor's courts. So what's going on here? What's the significance of all of this?
Well, let's be honest. That's where they wanted to go last year with it. And it got kind of, you know, the whole idea kind of got watered down, you know, to what they passed, which is you have to have a police officer actually monitoring that camera at all times.
Which kind of defeats the purpose of
right.
it. Yeah.
So if you have to have a police officer monitoring, well, then, you know, they'd be doing it anyway. You know, they'd be sitting out there in their car anyway trying to get people. But, but this is where they initially wanted to go. So now they're coming back and taking another bite of the apple on this one.
I mean, you have to go back to, I believe, 2006 when they tried to just ban these outright.
Right.
And Taft said, well, that's going to be unconstitutional, and he didn't sign it. And he's right. I mean, he's probably right that because of home rule, if an outright ban would not fly. So lawmakers have had to be kind of creative in how they approach this problem, which they hear about to no end from their constituents. I mean, I hear about it at least once a week from someone who got a camera ticket who wants to know when these things are going away. And the last effort, you know, tried to put some restrictions on how they could be used, and the Supreme Court said, no, you can't even do that. So this is a different take on it in that they're not putting any restrictions on the cameras per se, but they're saying that you know, we're going to, first of all, move these violations to municipal court where they belong. Representative Bill Seitz would say you can get your due process in municipal court, not a mayor's court that's run by, you know, a attorney hired by whatever village or town you're in. And then any camera revenue that is generated from these gets deducted from the state's allocation from the local government fund. So essentially, this bill makes it a money-losing enterprise for a entity to do it. And, you know, Representative Seitz says, well, all these cities and villages that want to have these cameras, they always say it's about safety. It's about safety. So if it's about safety, then they shouldn't worry that it's a money-losing enterprise.
I believe the second time they've attempted to do something like this with the fines. The last iteration would have possibly caused a city or town to have to pay more money than they actually collected in fees if they had some fees uncollected, et cetera. So this is a slight correction. They've been working really hard on this issue.
But if you look, though, there are no restrictions on where the cameras can be or who can operate the cameras. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even touch that aspect. It touches, you know, on the back end of things, what money can be. And Representative Seitz believes that this will stand in court because there's no constitutional right to that state local government fund money.
When I remember
well, there's
when,
barely any left anyway.
Whatever's so, left, right.
You know, whatever they're scrapping
when this was
over.
All going through before. To the municipalities, they had the safety concern, but the overall thing that they kept talking about was a loss of revenue. You know, we heard that constantly. So I think that's, you know, if you just take all the revenue out of it, I don't know how many cities would have the compunction to do it.
You know, plenty of Democrats vote for this bill. So if you think the State House is just bipartisan, you know, partisan squabbling.
Yeah,
bring out red light cameras.
It says bipartisan support.
I
just think it's
there.
A very populist bill, right?
Yeah.
You know, everyone hates these cameras. Well, I shouldn't say everyone, but a lot of people hate these cameras because they get a ticket and feel it's not right.
Yeah, because if they're speeding, they get a ticket.
Right. Well, and to be fair, there are some places in Ohio
speeding,
that have set up, you know, cameras in very strategic places to benefit their coffers.
Where they know there's a lot of red light runners.
Right. You know, especially Northeast Ohio, there's a couple spots where it's a small village and they have positioned an officer on an overpass and they are, you know, getting
is
speeders.
Is that the one that This American Life picked up in a story?
Probably. Yeah. Lyndale is infamous.
Yeah.
But also Newburgh Heights. And these are places where they have a piece of interstate that falls in their jurisdiction, and so that's where they ticket people. But, you know, I've gotten one of these tickets back when Cleveland still had them, and I didn't get it until a couple months later, and I couldn't even for the life of me remember where I was or what I was doing at that time, you know? I didn't even remember seeing a sign for the and all that stuff has changed since then. You know, you have to have signage. There's all sorts of rules. But I did. Representative Mike Duffy, who's term limited, did stand up and oppose this bill because, you know, it punishes the cities and local governments who are already cash strapped, who many of them do see this as not just all about safety or all about money, but a combination of both, of using technology that's available now that is less expensive than having a people. People are expensive. Everyone's had to cut their budgets, you know, in the last 7 years. So why not use the technology and save that human person for more important work of, you know, solving, you know, crimes and responding to calls for help?
I want to take a detour now back into politics land because it's notable how lowbrow the Republican primary has become for governor. Mike DeWine and his crew have pulled out all the stops. His chief opponent, Mary Taylor, well, chief opponent, but still, according to that poll, 20-odd points behind statewide, be that as it may, she has been none too kind to Mike DeWine or John Kasich, for that matter, the guy she ran with the last couple
her
times.
Her boss.
Yeah, her boss, yeah. But are you surprised at how fat, I mean, how dirty it got? Mike DeWine is a tweet from the newly created DeWine campaign account last week. Posted Wednesday, said, "Hey, Mary Taylor, Ohio, when you abuse your power and fly around on a state plane for personal use, it's not conservative, it's criminal. And with the hashtag OhioGov, hashtag lock her up, hashtag Rhino, Republican in name only." What do you make of that, Joe Ingles?
Well, I wasn't surprised. I think politics in general are taking a very negative tone. And we see it. It's a top-down thing. I mean, you see President Trump's tweets, you see the tweets all the stuff that comes against him. It's all negative. I sometimes you sit there and you read your Twitter or, you know, your Facebook and you're just like, I got to get up and go meditate or something because it's just horrible. I mean, you know, no one can speak kindly of anyone. And instead, I honestly think that we all bear some responsibility here because we don't teach our children And I'm not going to go off on a tangent here, but we don't teach our children to debate. We teach our children to insult. We don't teach, as a society, we do not teach our children to debate ideas. So therefore, when people get exasperated and they can't debate the idea, and a lot of these adults have grown up not being able to debate the idea, they go in and they insult people. And it gets really, at times, it just gets so negative that I think it turns a lot of people off from politics, and it also stops good discussion on important issues.
Well, I'm glad that Joe said the word debate, because there has not been a debate.
Oh, but, right. By the way,
Republican primary, and I think that's one reason why we're seeing this. Though I think, you know, Mary Taylor, my colleague Tom Suddis, had a column about this over the weekend that you know, these really, you know, these sharp jabs. They're kind of getting to the point where they're a little extreme, right, from Mary Taylor's campaign. But
they make sense because she's running from behind.
She's running from behind, and she's trying to prod him toward a debate,
right.
Which is why I think last week was pretty crucial in seeing, really for the first time, Mike DeWine acknowledged Mary Taylor even. Yes, it was negative. But it was
really
first,
negative. But why?
But it was the first time that, you know, he actually recognized that he's got a primary opponent. He's been taking a page out of John Kasich's 2014 playbook of, you know, just pretending that he's already got the nomination and kind of cruising, you know, up in the air, far above her.
But all of a sudden he descended, made a quick descent and was in the gutter, you know, thrashing about. And I don't really understand why, particularly if we've got a poll coming out showing him that many points ahead of her. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, my colleague Jesse Baumert wrote a story basically trying to analyze why this had happened. It is notable that, you know, it took it to another level to suggest that she should go to jail. I mean,
understatement
just,
of the morning.
It just did. So, and doing something that might I add, she was not criminally charged for. It's not even clear if she could be criminally charged for it. She repaid. She basically used a state plane to take her home one day.
Back during first term.
Yes, in 2011, Kasich said, "You shouldn't have done that. You need to repay the money." She did it. You know, if those things are taken care of quickly, they're taken care of quickly. There's no way that the inspector general in his very long time of investigating things would, you know, make any recommendation, and no way that, you know, a prosecutor would.
She had
file
another
charges.
Issue with some of her employees abusing the time clock. Mm-hmm.
That's correct. And
that was one of his quicker investigations.
It was one of his quicker investigations.
Indeed. So to suggest that she is a criminal because of this. First of all, factually, she is not, and likely would not be
and
found criminal.
And he was attorney general at the time. He could have prosecuted it if he wanted, if he felt so strongly about
That's
it.
That's right. So anyway, it took it to another level to use this lock her up, probably, objectively speaking, that was a mistake by the DeWine campaign and whichever staffer was in charge of the Twitter at that moment in time. So basically, though, just to get back to why this happened, DeWine, I think, was starting to feel you don't want to be the only person not in the discussion. And when Mary Taylor is starting to run negative ads, be on television, that kind of thing, I think he wanted to say, like, oh, I mean, we'll fight you, you know, and perhaps try to tamp some of that down. I think that's the point of that. Although, again, one could have done this without saying, let's put Mary Taylor in jail. And even the response from the campaign was like, well, probably a lot of Ohioans think that should have been a criminal charge. You know, it's just very, like, you can tell they know they messed up. So.
Well, we have now finished yet another hour of Weekly Reporter Roundtable. Thank you so much, Chrissy Thompson from the Cincinnati Enquirer.
Thank you.
And also Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com.
Thanks for having me.
And Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks for joining us.
Always great to be here.
Thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.